Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Euractiv virtual conference, Organic Farming in the EU, What Role for a Greener Europe? Co-financed by the Directorate General for Agriculture at the European Commission. My name is Angelo Di Mambro. I'm Agri-Food Editor at Euractiv. Expanding organic farming is in the EU is one of the flagship initiatives of the European Green Deal because of the benefits of organic farming to the environment. But what are the tasks linked to this challenge? This morning we'll discuss those challenges with Henri Delange of the Directorate General Agriculture at European Commission, Peter Schmidt, President of the Agricultural, Rural Development and Environment Section, NAT, of the European Economic and Social Committee, Martin Dermann, Executive Director of the Pesticide Action Network Europe, Jan Plagge, Board President of IFOM Organics Europe, and Lune Andersen, Chair of the Organic Working Party at the COPECO-GICA. As always, the case with food and sustainability will touch upon many aspects of the challenges for the organic sector. As a first step, I will ask the panelists to make an introductory statement, 1 or 2 minutes each. Then we will have almost 1 hour of Q&A, and with the possibility for the audience to ask questions through Slido. What is Slido? Slido is the app that enables our audience to join the discussion by asking questions. To do that, you can scan the QR code that you see on the screen or enter the Slido app and digitize the code organic. Finally, to wrap up, I'll ask the panelists to give us short closing statements. Now, without further delay, let's start the debate. I would ask the panelists to introduce yourself and tell us about your view on the role that organic farming can play in a more sustainable agriculture and food system in Europe. I would start from Henri Delange.
Yes, thank you very much. Good morning. So I'm Henri Delange. I'm the Deputy Head of Unit of the Organics Unit in DG Agriculture and Rural Development. So I want to thank you for recalling a bit the policy context of organic farming. So of course there is this umbrella strategy of the European Green Deal, and underneath the farm to fork strategy, the biodiversity strategy, with this very important target of achieving 25% of EU agricultural land under organic farming by 2030, and a significant increase in organic aquaculture. And as you've said, why this focus on organic farming? Because of the contributions, of course, any increase in organic farming can make to reducing pesticide, fertilizer, antibiotic use, because of all of the climate, environmental, soil, water, air, biodiversity, animal welfare benefits. Now, in 21, we adopted an action plan in support of the achievement of that target. It's very comprehensive, this action plan. We tackle demand and supply and sustainability. We try to cover the complete supply chain. We involve public authorities at different levels. And we are fully implementing this action plan, and perhaps we can come back later to that. Now, what is very important, I think, is that both this 25% target and the action plan have put organic farming really at the heart of policy making. And I think this is reflected, first of all, in the fact how every proposal now presented under the Green Deal takes explicit account of and also explicitly articulates its interrelation with organic production. And I think another example is the position of organic farming in the Common Agricultural Policy, where the share of EU agricultural land receiving support for organic farming will double compared to the previous cap.
Okay. Now, and then we will see all those aspects in our talk. Now it's just to introduce yourself and to say your general view on the topic. So I would go ahead with Peter Schmidt. 1 minute for you for the short introductory remark.
Yeah, Yeah, good morning, and thanks for the invitation. Good morning from the snowy and very cold Bavaria here. So we have snow. Not that nice to look out. But the outlook of the question of the organic farming is from the European Economic and Social Committee quite clear. I'm the president of the agriculture and food sector and environmental sector. So that means we comprise both, let me say, actors, sometimes not always aligned. But what we worked out is that we are absolutely committed to this path. So together with other partners, we launched with the Commission, with IFOAM, this organic award that shows that we would like to foster the path. What we think is that we have to do two things. The one is we have to help farmers much more than we did. We can't leave them alone. And secondly, we have to talk about the narrative building. We have still a narrative, especially from the conventional farming side, saying, yeah, if we go for all, even for 100% organic, then we can't feed the world. And this wrong narrative we must really counter, because it's getting more and more, and we see that, and farmers protest, they're scared. So that means let's work on the narrative and let's work on the help.
Thanks. Martin Darmin, Executive Director at Pesticide Action Network.
Thank you, Angelo, and thank you for inviting Pan. So the Pesticide Action Network Europe is a network of, as you might know, organizations, 50 organizations active across Europe to reduce the use of pesticides, to protect people's health and the environment. We know that over the last decade, it's been very, very clear that citizens ask public authorities to put in place the needed conditions to phase out the use of synthetic pesticides. We see it through regular EU barometers, the recent Conference for the Future of Europe, but also already two successful European citizens initiative, the Stop Glyphosate and the Save Bees and Farmers initiatives, asking to phase out synthetic pesticides. So indeed, organic agriculture is the way forward. It's what citizens ask for, and it's the solution to solve the biodiversity and health crisis our European intensive agriculture has led to. So clearly, the EU should do much more to favor the uptake of alternatives to pesticides and supporting the development of organic farming. I think it's, as Peter Schmidt said, really important to, in terms of narrative, to remind all the external costs of conventional farming and the fact that organic farming delivers a lot of benefits to society.
Okay, we will talk about that. Jan Plagge.
Yeah, thank you very much for this opportunity ahead of the European elections at the end of the mandate to discuss this important issue. So what is the status quo of organic, what did we achieve, and what do we have to achieve? I'm president of the Organic Movement in Europe, which is a cross-sectoral organization from farming to retailers, consumers, scientists, coming from the 70s when we had no regulations, when we had the discussions, how do we can make farming and food systems more sustainable, but not from a policy demand, but from a practical question, especially from farmers, how to avoid pesticides or synthetic fertilizers and make crop rotations more diverse, etc. And now 50 years later, we can say that this is really a European project. It's a European policy measure, as we heard from Henri from the European Commission. And that is what we have to speak and discuss about. It's not a top-down policy, it's a bottom-up movement providing answers and not obligations. It's a volunteer choice from farmers to consumers, and we can discuss the framework, how we can overcome this insecurity from farmers to consumers, how to convert to a more sustainable lifestyle. And let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Lone Andersen, the chair of Organic Working Party at the Copenhagen.
Thank you very much for being inviting to be here. I'm an organic dairy farmer also from Denmark. And I think it's a very important discussion we have, because I'm sure if we are doing it in a clever way, the organic farming will be one of the solutions for a greener EU. But what's very, very important is that if we have to further develop the organic agriculture, we should in any case be market driven and dependent on consumer demand, so that existing agricultural investments are also protected. This is to maintain the balance between supply and demand, and thus the economic viability of organic farmers, while avoiding reducing producer prices. Indeed, the continued growth of organic depends on a well-developed market where consumers demand organic products despite the additional price they cost. This requires a two-pronged strategy. One of them is educating further consumers so they know more about why we have the price gap. And the second, research and innovation is crucial, so we can still innovate to be better in the organic farming. Thank you.
Thank you. So let's start a debate from one of the topics that Henri de Lange has touched upon, the Organic Action Plan. In 2021, the European Commission launched this plan. Is it progressing well? I would like to have your point of view on that aspect. I would start from Henri de Lange.
Yes, thank you. So, as I tried to say, we are really fully implementing the action plan, and we think it is progressing according to plan. So, I will not in detail tell you all the things we have been doing, but for instance, we've been collecting, disseminating data on organic production so that consumers, producers can make the right decisions. For instance, the new regulation statistics, price information, which we are also regularly publishing. We're also measuring and raising consumer awareness of organic production. We have created the EU Organic Day. We have established the EU Organic Awards. More proactively, we are promoting also organic products to consumers. So we have reserved about one quarter of our agriculture promotion budget for the promotion of organic products, both inside the EU, outside the EU. We're negotiating international agreements on trade in organic products, as well as an outlet, let's say, for European organic products. We are heavily promoting green public procurement. So the procurement of organic products in public canteens is a very important potential source of demand. We are developing a number of actions to maintain consumer trust, so fighting fraud, which is, of course, very important that we continue to fight that, that we maintain that current trust in the logo. Yeah. Then there is everything in the common agricultural policy, all of the support that we have been able to obtain there. And so then a number of bottlenecks we are addressing. Yeah. So I would say a whole range of actions, both concerning demand, supply, and sustainability as well via research innovation actions that we are developing.
I would like to hear from the point of view of the sector. And so the European Commission, of course, is defending, is acting also on the action plan. Jan Plagge, what is the point of view of IFOM Organics Europe on the action plan? Is this a good tool? Do we need something more? Do we need something else?
Yeah, first I have to say that many, many actions, many measures Henri mentioned are really positive, and they were developed in a participatory manner together with the sector, and we were very much welcome many of these measures, like Henri mentioned, especially like the ring-fenced budget for promotion policies to really establish a direct connection to European consumers and European market to strengthen the visibility for the benefits for society, for consumers of local organic products. So many, many measures are really positive. But you want to hear some gaps, what we still have to deliver, what we
tell
still
us
have
just
to do.
One, just one gap, and then because
yeah,
we will take many of those.
Okay. Now one important gap is what is mentioned in Action 3 and Action 4 is to integrate organic products into the minimum mandatory criteria for sustainable food systems and to carry out a study to real food prices, including the role of taxation. So that are the measures which are connected with the current discussion, how to make it easier for consumer to choose European organic products, that choose of sustainable food, of organic products grown in Europe, is not more expensive, is not more difficult, but that it's easier and that it is competitive, and that is that a choice for organic is not a question of wealth or luxury. It's just a question of an easy choice to choose sustainable food. And this is still pending, that especially Action 3 and Action 4 has to be further developed and implemented.
I will turn to Lone Andersen with the same question. What is working well and one thing that should be improved in the action plan?
Yes, I also support the EU action plan as a good plan, but what we need very much is to make the organic farming more sustainable. And we need some tools, we need some innovation for this. I have an example. We now in Denmark are allowed, the conventional cows are allowed to be fed with some feed additive, which can reduce the methane with 30%. But it is synthetic, so we can't use it as organic farmers. So I need more innovation so we can be more sustainable as organic farmers, because that's the fight in the beginning. That's a fight now in the future. So more innovation, because Jan Plerke, he say that it have to be easier for the consumers to buy the organic farmer, the organic products. But what's very important for me, it is that it's good business to be organic farmer. If it's not a good business today and tomorrow and in the next many years, we will not get young people in our business. And then we do not have a future. So it's very important. More sustainability, more innovation. Thank you.
Martin Darmin, your point of view on that?
Yes, in our view, one point that is really lacking in the overall thinking of the Commission is to really re-internalize all the costs of conventional farming. This would considerably reduce the gap of price between organic and conventional. And would we internalize the costs of water pollution, health damage, health costs, and so on, biodiversity loss to the price of conventional farming, organic farming would suddenly become much, much more competitive and maybe even cheaper than conventional. This is something that would truly help and that is clearly missing here.
Okay, Peter Schmidt.
I agree with all the panelists, but I think the coherency is in policy making is a big gap. So the problem is we are still in silos, and that means it does not really fit together. For instance, concretely, we could have made a tax system which is incentivizing it, the farmers making the transition, but also the consumers in order to buy the product. So this would be an easy task to do, but that no one want to touch upon this, because don't talk about tax, don't talk about mandatory regulation, and that's the problem. We set targets, and we do not oblige the market participants in order to apply to this. So this must come, reduce the tax for organic production and help the farmers and give them a bit more for the transition period, and then they're able to bridge the time for the transition.
So we are going to delve into some details of this, because the market and the demand and the supply are things that have already emerged in our discussion more precisely. So after decades of growth, organic food sales in Europe have declined recently. Now things seem to be going better, but what is happening in the organic market? Why is this a discrepancy between the demand and the supply, maybe, or maybe there are other reasons that we don't see. Do we need policies to stimulate demand, and which ones? I would start from Jan Plagge.
So what happened? If policy leaves it just up to the market or to markets to decide for a sustainable or for a less sustainable choice, and when it comes to crisis like inflation and rising cost for organic, it's especially labor cost. We are more labor intensive. We are less dependent on fossil energy and fertilizers. If labor costs are rising, the prices for organic food are rising. And then if we leave it with our political frame just up to the consumers to have a choice, and everything gets more expensive, then the consumer says, "Also, now I have to decide on priorities." So it's a very good lesson learned for us in the member states and on the European level. If we want to, and my colleague said, we have to make life easier for farmers to choose the organic transition. There was a lot of good proposals, innovation, transition period. But at the end, the main measure we have to choose is to make organic produce more competitive on the market. And there we have a huge toolbox of opportunities which are not chosen. Now inflation is reduced and organic markets raise. It's not the only reason, but that is the main mechanism.
Can you make an example of those of one of the tools in the toolbox? If there was one policy that it's really needed, according to you, to overcome this problem, what would you choose?
A realistic tool beyond the already mentioned VAT tax, which is in the toolbox and not chosen. So we can we could choose it. That is very easy. One other which makes it easier is the current discussion on the CIP simplification package. We have in the CIP a design of conditionality rules which are not made for the organic farm system, especially when it comes to soil fertility coverage and prevention of erosion. That was made for a complete other farm system. And they are still in force, and policymakers had the chance now to overcome this gap, and they failed, and they didn't do it. So that is the main question in the last 2 years I got from farmers all over Europe. So to make it easier to comply with the organic regulation, with the organic farming system.
Lone Andersen.
Yes.
So what happens? Why was there this decline in organic sale in your view, and how to react, which are the policies that are needed to make organic food more accessible to consumers? I think this is the topic.
Yes, I think it's inflation. The consumers had not money enough to buy the organic products, and then we have maybe also some of the products there was too many. For example, there have been too much milk, and then the price are falling. And what we're going to do is to make more promotion and more innovation and help. And I support also Peter when he say more support for change to organic and some cap tools to help to support the organic farmers.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Martin Dermin.
Yes, thank you. Indeed, the increase in organic product sales consumption is really a sign that it's something that the population wants more, but is limited by the difference in cost. And well, as we saw now with the war and inflation, the consumption reduced. But clearly, it also shows that there's a lack of a plan by policy maker to really make organic consumption mainstream. And we need to put in place more conditions to favor organic consumption. So as a solution, I'm not an economist, of course, but clearly the fact that cap subsidies are mostly oriented still towards conventional farming is really a problem, considering the negative impact it has on climate change, on health and biodiversity. It's incoherent with the biodiversity strategy. And then applying the polluter pays principle will really help reshuffle the markets and help citizens realize what is best also from an economic perspective. Yeah.
There is Lone Andersen wants to say something. Very short, please.
Yes, but it's very important because I hear that Martin is... I think that in agriculture, we are one big family. We are not so many farmers anymore. We get less and less. But Martin, he's saying something very negative about the conventional farmers. And I think that's not how we find solutions. I think that one of the very important things here, also for the organic, also for the sustainability, climate change, climate issues, and the biodiversity, it's important to help each other and to make solutions together. I think you have now two times said something very negative about the conventional. It's very important for me to work together with all kind of farmers. Okay. If you're biodynamic, if you are conventional, we all have to help each other to feed the planet and to find solutions on the biodiversity and the climate changes.
Okay, I call institutions, EU institutions, to compose this apparent contradiction. So I would ask Peter Schmidt to say what he has in mind, what the European Social Economic and Social Committee has in mind to respond to these market problems, and then Henri Delange from the Commission. First, Peter Schmidt.
Yeah, so the one is what when you focus on the processing side to the farmers is the one thing. The other thing is indeed the question what is happening at the market. But I would like to bring an aspect into the debate which is not that very, let me say, extendedly discussed. So once we want to increase that, what we would like to see at the farming sector means 25% means we must go in the market at the same growth in the same size upwards. So it means we have to do much more on the market side. And there are different points, not only putting, you know, the responsibility to the consumers. There's also the responsibility for the processors. Why not obliging the processors integrate step by step, starting with 5%, going to 10% in the conventional production, let me say it like that, organic production. So then we create an additional market for the farmers, for the organic farmers, that they have to take in their food production organic elements in order to increase this. One point. Second point is, what about the public procurement? Why do we not oblige in the public procurement at the same time when we oblige or we want to have 25% for farmers? Why is it not the same for the public procurement to say they must increase their part of organic products in the end of the journey on 100%? But let's start with a part to go to 25, to the next. So, and this could be done through policy making. This is a concrete tool where we can support the market side without a lot of obligations and regulations. Just start small, but the scale is quite big.
Okay, Henri Delange.
Yes, thank you. No, just two key messages. First of all, I don't think we have to exaggerate the decrease in the demand for organic products. We had a tremendous increase in the demand under COVID. And then it's true that under Ukraine, the invasion of Ukraine and food inflation, there have been some decreases. And it's true that in certain countries in 22 and the first half of 23, there have been decreases. But even so, even in 22, 23, there have been member states where consumption has continued to increase, and we are still at higher levels than 2019. So I think the overall trend is still positive. Second, I think it's indeed very important to recognize that demand, the demand for organic products does not fall from the sky, because what we see now is that member states say the demand for organic products has decreased. So I want to adapt my CAP strategic plan and I want to reduce my ambition. So what we tell member states, it's something you can impact upon. And beyond all the things that have been said already on prices, there's a whole range of things you can do. Educate your consumers, inform your consumers. What is the logo? What does it stand for? The agricultural promotion, the green public procurement. And I want to say the work on the minimum mandatory criteria for sustainable food public procurement. A lot of work has been done there already. There's also the development, what we support, of short supply chains, of biodistricts. I think, as Peter Schmidt says, also the development of processing capabilities so that you're not blindly pushing agricultural production and then not having any outlets for those products. What is also important, and that's what we're trying to do, is to involve the whole supply chain, including wholesalers and retailers. For instance, there is the issue with organic milk in France. I understand that this is to a significant extent related to a decision of supermarkets not to make organic milk so much available in their sales. So these are things which we have to comprehensively tackle. Then, as I said, we are also negotiating trade agreements, okay, which also will help farmers to sell their products. So I really think this issue of, first of all, market is something you have to pursue proactively. And then indeed, there's a whole range of things you can do.
So thanks to Henri Delange for having given us this detailed picture of the situation and of the actions that are have been undertaken also from the Commission and the EU institutions. Another topic, Lona Andersen said, mentioned two times innovation. And organic sector is renowned as to be as an innovative sector in a sense. But there are one of the problems that is recurrent is the fact that organic farming usually produces lower yields than conventional farming. So there are some saying that new crop varieties obtained through gene editing, also known as new genetic techniques or NGTs, can be a solution. But I know that we will hear very different things now. So I would start from Henri Delange, because the Commission has proposed a regulation that excludes the organic sector from using these technologies. Could you remind us why?
Yes, so it's clear that this proposal on NGTs, so what NGT plants that could also occur naturally or by conventional breeding, so what we call category one NGT plants, legally speaking, are still GMOs. And so the use of GMOs has been considered incompatible with organic production since the very beginning of the 90s. Also, we know from Eurobarometer surveys and other surveys that consumers buy organic products to an important extent because they do not want to consume GMOs. And then, of course, there are all the other very important reasons, like they don't want to consume pesticides and so on. It's clear that also the sector itself supports this particular position of organic in the NGT proposal. And that's why we have proposed that there is this traceability and that consumers and producers retain their choice in terms of what they want to produce, what they want to consume.
Okay. Jamplag. Why the NGTs are not fit for the organic sector?
Yeah, a lot of reasons are already explained by Henri. So we assessed the development of breeding technologies since the last 20 years, and a lot of organic breeding projects are in the center of innovation when it comes to pest resistance in apple production, in wine production, or potatoes, grain breeding projects. So it is not a question if we need innovations and progress in breeding. But when it comes to genome editing, the organic sector in Europe and on global perspective has a clear position. Genome editing methods are not in line with the organic principles. And these restrictions is always an opportunity for other innovation paths. Let me mention just one aspect we discussed during this journey of positioning that 97% of the organic sector in Europe is clear in favor to stay GMO free, is the issue of patents and being much more dependent as farmers from big industry, seed industry, chemical industry, promoting a farm model of more dependency. And the organic movement, the organic project wants to have more local adapted, ecosystem adapted farming systems, not depending on a global size industry. And NGTs, that is what we observe in the discussion in the European Parliament and now in the Agri-Minister Council, the Commission proposal has not a solution for the issue of patents introduced by NGTs. So that is just one aspect beside the mentioned aspect where we clearly see. So be careful, and not only to the organic farmers, but to all farmers.
Martin Dermin?
Yes, I think here we also need to have a change in narrative. It's always focusing on the lower yield, or we can reverse it. We want always more yields, higher yields. This is really inherent to biology. If you have a cow that produces more milk or more meat, it will be weaker and it will be more sick. You have the same with a plant. So if we always want to have more and make the plants produce more, they will be more sensitive to pests. And this is something we need to also accept, that we could have a bit lower yields, but also work much more on food waste, which is around 30% in Europe or more, and stop always thinking of higher yields. Then the NGT debate, again, in our view, it's trapping the farmers in remaining dependent on big corporations, and it's really important. And this is really the global mentality of agroecology, is to have a system change so that the farming system allows to have resilient crops and resilient systems, and not always make farmers depend. I mean, for instance, a plant, even in natural breeding, sometimes a plant that we select to be resistant to a pest, and then we grow it intensively, after a few years or after a decade, the pest will circumvent the resistance of the plant, and then we will need to have a new NGT and so on. So we would remain in this system. It's really a system change that we need.
Lone Andersen.
Yes. It's not... first, I would like to correct Martin. I have cows at home. They give a very high yield. They give 12,500 kilo milk every year. And they are some of the long living cows in Denmark. So they are very healthy. They are very strong. So I'm not agree at all in what you are saying there. But about the NGT and about innovation, I think it's very important that we are open-minded for innovation. And I think the proposal from the parliament, where they propose to follow, if it will be, give some significant advantage for the convention, for these NGTs, then we have to be open-minded and then see what the results is, and then discuss it in some years. Because I think that, as I have said before, that the sustainability for the organic farmers is very, very important. And we have to be open-minded to find different tools to help us to be more and more, have a stronger farming and to be more sustainable. That was part.
Yeah, thanks. Peter Schmidt, your point of view on...
Let me start with one point. I'm not sure whether the growth model in which we think and we believe, or for some is a faith, in this model lies the future of the planet. To be clear, because when we grow, we see that this goes always on the expense of the planet. And the debate on how many liters. So I'm a cheesemaker. When I learned this 45 years ago, a cow had only, I guess, 3,000 kilos per year produced. So we see the increase of growth. I'm not sure whether this is really that what we should aim for, and say in 20 years we have then 20,000 kilos per cow, once even a cow has the limits. No? So there will be the moment, but this is another debate. On the NGTs, so we produced an opinion in the ESC, and as we said in the beginning, we have all the stakeholders in our committee. We came to a position. So and the position is not to say to ban it completely, but we said we have to be careful when it comes especially to the farming sector. And here we think we also need a coherency in the policies. That means if we say we have here in Europe a regulation for this, then it must be mandatory also for the member states. So it can't be, and that's the risk from the time being, that one member state is allowing it or is banning it in a way. So that would distract the market for different participants. That's why we say this should be regulated in the organic sector rather than just in the NGT. Part of this the regulation. So we are not per se against as ESC, but we say please be careful. And I had recently a chat with a very big processor, baby food processor, a private owned company. So they are super scared. They said, so this could be the end. This could be the end of our production. That's why please regulate it in a way that we are not really. Concerned on it.
Now I'm picking up a question from Slido that helps us to move to another subject. The question seems quite broad and general, so I would ask you to give a very, if possible, a short answer. But it makes sense. Huh? So Carolyn Macking is asking, is organic farming the only solution for a greener EU? Would it be better to combine the best of both worlds, organic and conventional? I know this is a very broad question, maybe too broad, but what's your point of view on that? I would start from Martin.
Yes, thank you. Well, organic farming is a label, so indeed it's possible to farm using agroecological practices without having the labels. So this is one thing. And the second thing, again, and there I would like to say I'm a veterinarian. I've been doing research. So what I'm saying is science-based and also based on the expertise from the field, is that in conventional farming, the high yields we obtain, be it with animal production or with plant production, is by pushing the biological systems, helping them, but then this leads to other problems. We might have higher yields, but it leads to a lot of negative problems, and this is not reflected in the price of food, but then we pay it with higher price for water, higher price for health systems, and so on. So there's really a need to move towards a chemical-free agriculture, remaining productive, of course. But we see it again with through a lot of scientific publications that it is possible now to feed the world with organic farming.
Okay, Jan Plagge, so moving towards having the best of the two worlds, trying to have the best of the two worlds. Is this possible? Is this feasible? Very short,
this question,
please. We have 30 minutes left, so we are
30 minutes. But it's a very good question. It's a question which is raised very often, and I think it's important to have a common understanding on that. So on the role of organic in a whole agri-food system. So first, what I would say, farmers and consumers both need orientation. They are making day by day decisions. So they have to decide if they want to invest in a stable or in another crop rotation or in other markets like consumer. So where and what are they buying? And that is always in a world which is 100%. You can't divide up. And in this market, especially in Europe, we adapted farm systems to different competitive areas, some for the world market, just for commodities, some for local markets, so very, very small scale. And organic was one answer of different answers developed especially after the 70s, 80s, out of practice, not from policy driven, but from practice driven, to find answers. Not to say now all farmers need to sow buffer stripes, or now they have to reduce pesticides of 50%, or now they have to reduce animal stock. So this lead in a dead end, exactly like this picture. Now we take the half of organic and the half of today conventional, and then we have the best solution. We don't. Okay. This is not an innovative frame. So let's address the role of organic. Organic is today not a solution for 100%, but in 100%, organic is the best solution we have to drive a very practical approach to a most sustainable, defined, regulated framework for farmers and consumers' decision. Okay. If we haven't had this frame of organic movement, of organic regulation, of organic market orientation, etc., we have to invent it, as many regions in the world. So let's be proud that we have this driving force of organic and to expand it. And we have a target of 25%, not of 100%.
Okay.
And if we reach 25%, we can reduce cost, we can make organic more attractive to much more people, and it will influence the rest of the 75%. With many, many...
That's clear. Practices. That's clear. Lone Andersen, please.
Yes, I can say it very very short. And I said, thank you for a very good question. And my answer is a big yes. Of course, we have to help each other, support each other, and not fight each other. And that we have to do it with research and innovation. Of course, also for the organic farming, but of all kind of farming. We have to be open-minded. That's what we're teaching our... young people in our agriculture schools, where we're getting more and more young people, especially in my country, and they have a new mind, a new mindset, and we have to use all the good ideas to find solutions on all our challenges. So thank you for a very good question.
Okay. Peter Schmidt?
I mean, the answer is given, so we have it in any way. So if you would like to go and say the ideal world is 100% organic farming, this is an illusion. So that's why I would be support Lone to say, so as long as we have it, let's support each other. But these are two different models in the concept. So we can't mix it. No? If we want to go for organic, then it must be labeled as organic. Because me as consumer, I want to know whether I buy organic production or not. So that's a clear choice, and that's why we have to distinguish. But we have it, and as we should not, as Lone said, make a fight between the organic farming and the conventional farming. It doesn't make any sense. We must help them to make the transition. So, and onboard them with incentives to make the transition.
Okay.
Because what we know is organic farming is more resilient as the conventional one. That's already proven.
Okay. Henri Delange. So, how improve this, how avoid the polarization, and how, let's say, find space in the middle between the organic and the unconventional, maybe, from the policy point of view. If this is something that you are trying to do, I mean, you are, if conventional become more sustainable, you are doing this, I think, no?
Yeah, I think it's clear that in the Green Deal, in the farm to fork, in the biodiversity strategy, in the overall sustainability transition, we need to have everybody on board. So both the organic sector and the conventional sector. We see organic as a comprehensive package, so offering balanced solutions. The advantage is that it's legally defined, it is certified, it covers the complete supply chain, and it has a kind of a pioneering role, which, based on all of the actions we have already discussed, research, innovation, and so on, I think we need to develop further. But it's obvious, and I think Jan Plag already said it, the initial target is 25%, so we're not going for 100% at this moment. So it is clear that in parallel, we need to increase the sustainability of conventional production as well. And I think that's also what the Common Agricultural Policy is trying to do, and what several of the proposals under the Green Deal has been trying to do. So it's clear that, as I said, we need everybody on board in the sustainability transition. Thank you.
On this topic, that's why I've chosen that question, because it helped me to touch upon the next one, labeling. So it's one of the tools to incentivize the demand. The organic label is something that has established already, and it's a success. Now, what happens when labeling sustainable food that is not organic? I will start with, I've noticed that the organic sector, of course, is a bit skeptical on some of the schemes that are currently out there. So I would start to ask the question to Jan Plag.
I mean, we are not skeptical when it comes to clear measurement of sustainability performance, especially on farm systems. So that was always our approach to keep the best balance between food production, biodiversity, clean water production. So we see farmers as water producers as well, biodiversity producers. So the key question of our yield is a balanced yield between all of our services we provide for society. And science and on-farm research, especially the last 10 years, provides a lot of data, a lot of experience to measure this performance. So in that case, we are part of this research and innovation network to have more clarity. When it comes to solutions like the product environmental footprint approach, which brings in methods where a single farm system can't decide how they will reach the balance, then we are lost in the project. And that is what we brought in the whole discussion when it comes to green claims, sustainable food systems, etc. That we really need to be careful that the already transformation we achieved by today, that it matters where a single farm is, in the mountains, in the flatlands, at the coast, in the north, on islands. So we have a very heterogenic conditions for farming. So
the problem is that the questions are
No, sorry.
It was. Please complete your reasoning.
What I wanted to say, this industrial method of product environmental footprint was designed for industry products produced in fabrics where you have similar conditions, and it is not adapted to this heterogenic farming condition. That is what we address as iForm Organics Europe. Into the European debate when it comes to defining sustainable farm and food systems, to really look at the farming level, and there and then we are a very experienced partner together with scientists to deliver methods which fit into our European project.
Thanks. Lone Andersen?
Well, I think it's very important that there is a coexistence about with this labeling, and I'm very afraid of the organic production about this sustainability if we say no for all kind of tools who can help us to be more sustainable. I can give you a very hot example. I don't hope it will be the example in the rest of Europe. In Denmark, we are working on making a tax on CO2. And if the tax are coming in the way they say now, it will almost kill the organic farmers because they're not in a stable, because there's a lot of tools we cannot use. And of course, I fight against this and I work for the organic farming, but still there's a lot of things happening. How we research about this sustainability and how we're doing it, and I you have to believe me in my heart. I hope really that we will stay strong as an organic farmer, and I hope and I think we do. But it's still a fight, and we have to go on with innovation and research and be open-minded to stay and to be more and more sustainable, because that's a big fight in the future.
What is the point of view of the Commission on this, on the labeling or measuring rightly, as Jan Plaget said, to have the right measurement of sustainability and so to give value to that production?
Yeah. So let me first maybe say that we think labeling in general is very important. And this commission has done a lot of work on labeling. So on sustainability labeling, on origin labeling, on front of pack nutrition labeling, on animal welfare labeling. And each of these issues raise the position of organic farming. What is the articulation with organic farming, as Lona also has said? And I think, just to give you one example, indeed, as Jan Plaget said, there's the Green Claims Initiative. Now, there, organic farming will be exempted. So once you have the logo, you don't have to prove anymore that you are better for in terms of pesticide use, fertilizer use, and so on. And also certain statements which are inherently linked to organic farming, like better for biodiversity and so on, you wouldn't have to prove anymore. Beyond that, we fully share the concerns about the environmental footprint methodology, which comes from the industrial area and which at this moment is not at all adapted to agriculture, even less to the subset, let's say, of organic farming. So I think we have been also discussing within the Commission on how we can improve this methodology, and there is work ongoing on that. But I think we can all agree that for the moment, this methodology does not meet its purpose. Thank you.
And one of the distinctive character of the organic food is the absence of synthetic pesticide residues. I would like to ask Henri Delange, how it works when finding on residues of non authorized substances are notified, and what can you mentioned already the fight to the fraud. So I would like to hear from you a bit more on that.
Yeah, so this is a very important issue within the context of maintaining consumer trust, fighting fraud. So in the legislation, there is a whole scenario which you would have to follow. So if there is a robust laboratory test result pointing to a contamination with a non-authorized product or substance, then of course the operator first have to assess whether the suspicion of non-compliance with the organic legislation can be eliminated at his or her level. And if not, then there is a sequence of informing the competent, or informing your control body, informing the competent authority. And this is these suspicions of non-compliance are then entered into a database at European level. And then there's a system of notifications, but ultimately the result is that each contamination case needs to be investigated to see whether what the root cause of the contamination was. And then, well, if there was active use, non-authorized active use, then of course there have to be sanctions. Sometimes it's a question of improving your preventive and precautionary measures. So there is a very structured approach towards this whole issue of detections of contaminations with non-authorized products and substances. So for us, it's a very important priority.
I would say on the topic of pesticide, because one of the biggest news in the last months was the withdrawal of the proposal on the sustainable use of pesticide regulation. I know that this is not maybe, but I ask the same. What do you expect? What's after that? Okay, there was a proposal for regulation on sustainable use. There is no longer that. How to go ahead? Because this is something that consumers, to which consumers give a big value, and it is also needed for biodiversity and environment. So I will start with Martin Dermin.
Yes, indeed, this proposal for a regulation on the sustainable use of pesticides was an answer to one of the answers to the European Citizens Initiative, Save Bees and Farmers, asking to phase out the use of synthetic pesticides. And what one has to know is that there is already a directive on the sustainable use of pesticides. It's in place since 2009. And it's poorly implemented. This is concluded by the Commission itself. And in this directive, since 2014, normally European farmers are supposed to use integrated pest management and use pesticides really as a last resort after putting in place all kinds of preventative measures. It's a failure. The Commission acknowledges it, but the Commission faced too many resistances in the Parliament and the Council, as we know. But the observations that there is no reduction of synthetic pesticide use and no uptake of the alternative measures is still there. So the Commission said they are withdrawing the proposal, that they would come with a new approach, hopefully after the elections. We have to see how the new approach is. We clearly push towards that direction, maybe something more collaborative, less top-down, with more consultation of stakeholders since the beginning, which was less the case here. But clearly, we cannot stay with the status quo. I know some people don't like hearing it, but scientists have clearly shown that synthetic pesticides have a harmful impact on farmers themselves, on bystanders and on biodiversity, and we need to transition away from those. So we don't really have a choice, and the new commission, the new parliament will need to work on that.
What are the expectations of the organic sector, Jan Plag?
A lot is already said by Martin, especially to have a restart, a new approach, which is more collaborative, because we have to have member states and all farmers on board with this project, or at least a big majority to say, okay, we want to contribute to this target to reduce especially the use of harmful pesticides. But especially that question, what is harmful or what is less harmful, was not really debated when it before it came to the proposal. So then we debated on areas with no use of pesticides and sensitive areas, and that brought so many farmers gave so much resistance that this political project failed. So the expectation for the next mandate is a clear restart with a new approach. We have in my home country Germany, we have several regions which already have a consensus between the whole farming sector, between environmental and NGOs, to reduce pesticide in the same quantity in a consensus. So the farming community is very open to that, but the approach was wrong. So I really hope for a restart in the EU mandate.
Lone Andersen.
Yes, I think it's very important that we reduce the synthetic pesticides, of course, yes, but it also have to be pragmatic and realistic objective, and we have to find then some alternatives. Yes.
Peter Schmidt, how to start, how to restart on that?
Everyone,
from the policy-making point of view.
You would not find anyone to say, I would like to have more pesticides. And you can get more and more despaired something, because in the beginning I talked about the coherency. So I don't know how this should be organized at the farm level when we see the last decisions for this simplifying the common agriculture policy. If the policymakers means it seriously, no controls below a farm with 10 hectares, I don't know how this can be controlled then in the future. So that's why sometimes the things are not really fitting together. So I don't want to make the farmers suspicious to this, but we will have some of them because they are desperate enough to because of the market prices and due to do everything in order to keep the yield for them. So that's why this kind of measures are totally wrong. First victim was the law. Now they come up with another example, which is not helping for making the farming sector greener. You know what I mean? So in the proposal now at the table is that there should be no controls for farmers below 10 hectares. And this is something what I do not understand as a citizen. No, so not as someone in an institution. So is this that we start as next, that we say we do not control on the street the speed for Cinquecento cars, or because the small cars are per se less speedy, or what is this kind of policy making? So that's why, to be crystal clear, we need the reduction, and this of course has to be monitored and controlled.
Okay, I try to make a summary on that. We should restart from dialogue and consistency. Is the Commission ready to respond to those calls from the stakeholders and other policymakers? Henri Delange.
Yeah, of course, I cannot preempt what the next commission and what the next parliament will do. So I think it's entirely their prerogative to decide on the future of this proposal. But consultation and involvement of stakeholders is, of course, a very important principle of EU legislative work. So I would think that we would try to maximize this as much as possible under the better regulation perspectives. But what precisely now the next commission will do or the next parliament, of course, I cannot preempt that. Yeah.
Of course, with almost 5 minutes left, I would ask you to leave us with a short statement of closing statement, as we have done at the beginning of this debate. I would start from Jan Plagg.
Yeah, thanks a lot for this opportunity and for the questions. So looking to the next mandate of a parliament, of the commission, I think it's very important to further develop the strategies under the Green Deal and to further develop the role of organic, so that it is not a question of polarization. I think that's what our discussion brought out, but it's really an opportunity for many farmers and for many consumers and for policymakers to have this comprehensive model, European model. It's really a European strength. It's a European advantage on a global market to further develop this model with a positive effect when it comes to innovation, when it comes to develop market, to consumer decisions, to consumer awareness, even in the market for 100% of the farming community. So I look optimistic to the next mandate and to a very important role of organic in Europe.
Thanks, Lone Andersen.
Yes, thank you. I'm also optimistic for the organic, and I'm sure that organic farming help to for a greener will be a greener Europe, and especially if we are open-minded for research, for innovation, and for more. So it's also a sustainable business. So we also earn some money. So sustainable also. So we will be attractive for the young farmers. So yes, I believe in a strong organic business in the future.
Martin Dermin.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for organizing this event and the nice discussions. I think one of the key words that was repeated by many speakers today is coherence in EU policies. If we really want to protect biodiversity, protect health, if we invest in biodiversity with public money, we need to be coherent and promote virtuous practices in agriculture and move towards more organic farming. Many solutions have been discussed today, but are not yet fully implemented. So it's positive for the future, but we need public authorities to really implement them and reward more farmers for organic farmers for the social, economic and environmental benefits they produce for society. And I think that one thing that we should maybe do more, it was not discussed today, is that conventional and organic farming in many member states evolve in two parallel worlds. And we would need maybe more bridges between the two communities. It's not the case in every country, but in many countries it's the case. And this could clearly help also more communication and helping with the transition. Thank you.
Peter Schmidt.
Yeah, let's join forces and challenge the candidates for the European Parliament. So this is an opportunity for all citizens to ask the candidates what they want to do. And that's why I'm also optimistic. Just push for this. And one more possibility is the organic award. We mentioned it already. Go to the websites. The application form is open for all are interested in. Join it. This is a good momentum also to increase and to make your business more visible. The winners of the last years, they have increased their market shares. So best moment to do it now.
Thanks to Peter Schmidt. Harry Delange, building bridges between the two communities, participate also, as Peter Schmidt said, voting at the European elections and for the organic reward. Innovation, but also attention to the food system, the ecologic balance of the food system. What is the final message that we can give today? The commitment of the European Commission on the action plan, on the organic action plan.
Yeah, I think from our perspective, so. I think I'm not always hearing you very clearly, but
yes.
Okay.
Can you hear us? You can talk. Go ahead.
Okay.
We hear you.
Okay. Thank you. So I think what I take away from this conference, of course, is that there's a lot of work on the shelf for us. So a lot of legislative work on very diverse aspects, on green claims. There's, for instance, also on packaging waste, on NGTs, on minimum mandatory criteria for green public procurement, on international trade. The work on the next common agriculture policy is already starting. Then there are all of the other actions under the action plan. So a lot of work to be done. But I think two key messages. One key message, I think, is that we should not lose faith in the long-term prospects of organic farming. So it's true, there have been some issues with demand, but the long-term growth prospects of organic farming, organic production remain intact. And therefore, this is not the moment to reduce our ambition. And then I think, as several speakers have already referred to, and as I also said in the beginning, we are now at the point that organic farming is at the heart of policy making. Any Green Deal proposal has to stipulate explicitly how it positions itself versus organic farming. And I think under the next commission, under the next parliament, but even beyond, we have to, of course, from all sides, try to consolidate this position and to further strengthen it. I think that is very important.
And with that, with this optimistic message, I thank all the panelists. Thanks to Henri Delange, DG Agri European Commission, Peter Schmidt, President of the Agriculture, Rural Development and Environment Section, NAT, of the European Economic and Social Committee. Thanks to Martin Darmin, Executive Director, Pesticide Action Network Europe. Thanks to Jan Plagge, Board President of IFOM Organics Europe. And thanks to Lone Andersen, Chair of the Organic Working Party at the Copacogeca. And thank you for those who listened to us, to followed us. And see you next time for another Euractiv virtual conference. Thank you.